They separated from the main tribe and went right through them. And if you read the popular version, of course, we won the battle, and after killing X numbers of people, and we chased them off this way and chased them that way in 40 different directions, and it took all our supplies, and didn't bother women or children and things. The noble white man came in and did a down the center run on them and banged them off both directions and chased them all over Hell's Half Acre. And so who knows what really happened. I mean, if you ask the guys who supposedly chased some of them up this direction, they came back and probably said, well, we got most of them, or all of them, or 10 of them, or whatever. Well, then they get some, everybody went the other direction, they got some. When you had all done, like the coffee table, the liar's club at the coffee table, first liar doesn't have a chance.
So, is it your understanding that the whites who were doing the fighting were Army or National Guard?
Well, I don't know about National Guard. There was a contingent, I think, sent from Fort Wall. I would go get the book and show you that.
Well, I know, I've read about that. Yeah. I just wondered what your information was.
Well, just what I've read in there. Okay. I've got about 50 books in there that tell different stories.
Yeah.
Depending on who tells it. If it's a little pamphlet that was drawn up about so thick and about that there, and they get one guy's version of what was going on at that particular time here. So if you read some of the writing on these people that did a lot of the writing, these so-called early histories of Grand Ronde Valley, or all the whole area for that matter, they barely could write. The spelling and the grammar and the whole thing. So they don't spell, maybe that's the way they spelled in those days, but most of them probably were lucky to have had a third or fourth or fifth grade education.
But that doesn't mean that they weren't intelligent.
No, I don't mean that. Yeah. I mean, when you read a version, though, one guy's account of the Battle of the Grand Round, or when Bonneville came here the first time, Captain Bonneville, he came in here and he describes this entire area as being on fire. Now, what's that mean? Does that mean if I'm sitting here in this house and look out the window and see fire all around here, then make a statement the entire area was on fire? See, well, I never quite understand what, because if you had a means of getting an aircraft and flying up there and looking over the whole area, you could say, yeah, this whole area was on fire. Maybe this part, but the Indians set fire to it anyway, so it kept it clean. But anyhow, his description, I think he was here for about 2 weeks, at Fairback, what was it?
Early part of the night.
Yeah, 1820s
or so.
Yeah, some. Mm-hmm. And the descriptions that he wrote were not extensive, but which certainly different from some guy that was writing out of the Burnt River and coming down here and landing in this valley and thought it was the most beautiful place he'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. So maybe they were 10, 15, 20 years apart, or maybe a little longer than that. But you don't see references to this place being on fire, for the most part, except in somebody's that account.
Why do you think the Indians might have set fire?
Well, they did to keep it clean. No, they keep it, see,
clean from
Ponderosa forests don't burn real well if you got them open. They're like parks. And, for instance, down at the far end of the valley, they're gone now. But even in my lifetime, starting over at, like, where Tamarack Springs is, and that part of the world there, clear across the valley over to Mount Harris, and I don't know how far this way, But that was all ponderosa forest. There's still some trees down there at, on Mackenzie Lane, where Clements built that house out there. The ponderosa pine is still there, and down in what they call Dry Creek School, and that way there's some still there. But they, the earlier pioneers, the people who used to live out there, they said, well, this was all forest, which they promptly cut down and made into farms and houses and whatever there. But so when, in order to not get caught in fires that were going to burn them up along with it, they kept, like up here, and all this area up in there, it used to be, even in my lifetime, it does not look now like it did when I was a kid, because it was almost all ponderosa forest out there.
What area are you talking about?
Well,
now?
Between here and the top of the mountain, and up toward Ukiah, and clear across the Blue Mountains here, over into, that's the reason Monument Lumber Company here, it came here.
Mm-hmm. But, much taller trees than we have
now. Yeah, huge trees, and just marvelous forest. Well, they cut them all down. If you know anything about forestry at all, you know what comes up right after that. Mm-hmm. Brush and the weed trees, the lodgepole pine.
Yeah.
When the tussock moss cleaned this all out here a few years back, it was all lodgepole pine for the most part. Between here and Meacham, right beyond Meacham, there wasn't a tree left out there that was alive. Well, they've been cutting a damn lodgepole down every 15 minutes ever since the state spent most of the time keeping that freeway clear. And if you don't, we drove all over that area just the other day, a couple of my buddies, and we went out and traveled all over that area just to see what was going on. Some places are thinning it now and people opening it up, but it's got lodgepole there. I don't know what would be the natural progression of these trees and this land if you just got off of it and didn't said, okay, let it go. I don't know at what point in time they would die from fire or whatever might die and might cause it, but lodgepole is a weed tree. It has no, in a big scheme of things, but it did exist. You didn't see that much lodgepole. Now it's like hair on a dog's back. Mm-hmm. And we drove through miles and miles and miles of that here the other day, and it just looks like fur.
Yeah.
It just comes up every place.
So do you think when the Indians were here and setting fires, they were burning the underbrush?
Yeah, keeping it open.
Yeah. So they were obviously aware of forest conservation tactics.
Well, yes, to their own convenience, because they well, now here, when the Oregon Trail came to the valley, got to B Avenue, and stopped dead in its tracks, because there's mountains out here. That river, nobody went up and down that river, it was full of brush and everything. So what did they do? They went up Fox Hill, went over the top, and dropped down into the Five Points Creek country, which is just up above Hillgard. They cut left on Pelican Creek and went up through there, up to the narrow canyon, and went, got up on top of this flat I was talking about where Arlie Smith grew up. They trailed across there and they dropped into California Gulch and went out by where it's called Blue Mountain Crossing now. And that's where the roads weren't down in here. You couldn't get through it.
What evidence is there for the roads going that route that you just said?
Well, the Fox, I don't know, I'm not anybody that I ever knew. But when the road crossed the valley here and hugged the mountain around here, in later time, now the first getting out of the valley, right there at the corner of Cedar and A Street, where I had my greenhouse and the old courthouse used to sit. There was a stagecoach barn or place there, and I knew this lady that she was born there, that area, and she was still alive after the war, and she taught at the old white school, which is just about where the high school is now. In fact, she called me up one day, and they were painting out this old stagecoach barn, and she gave me the buggy that she used to drive from her house to the school when she taught. And I had my horses up there, and she said, "Would you like to have that?" And I said, "I sure would. It's in good shape." And I put it in a potting shed I had there and had the door locked. I came up there about two or three days later, and somebody broke the lock off and stole my buggy. But anyway, Ella Russell, she lived there, oh, we bought that greenhouse in 1945, and I think she was there for another maybe 10 years. She passed away, and the old courthouse has since been torn down. And homes there now. But anyway, when you got on B Avenue, you came up there and you all of a sudden you ran into the side of the mountain here. And I've read this different times, the account of getting up over that, up out of that, well, Table Mountain here, over here. Hospital kind of sits just to the south of that Table Mountain base a little bit. They went up out of there and climbed up on top, and they crossed over until they got to Rock Creek. And they dropped down Rock Creek, and then they came down the Grand Round River to Five Points Creek. They went up Five Points Creek and to the Five Point to Pelican Creek. Turned on Pelican Creek and had to fight their way through it, you know, to even get a space wide enough to put things in, you know, get their stuff through. But I haven't been up there for a long time because it's all fenced off now, but when I used to go up there with Harley a lot, and he went up Pelican Creek, and then all of a sudden here was a Harding family had this little stagecoach bar and place right there on Pelican Creek, and there was no, it kind of petered out, and there was no place else to go, so they made a sharp left, and they had to just chisel this road up to get up on that flat. They literally chiseled it with whatever they had, made a place big enough to drive up, you know, get up the side of that little canyon draw, and got up on that flat, then they could go on over to basically what's the Spring Creek country. People are more oriented toward that. And then that Blue Mountain Crossing, as they call it now, the tracks are still there. And they went over, and Narcissa Whitman, they put, I see in her diaries, there's a sign up there on that road, that summit road that runs over the top of Mount Emily off of the freeway, out there, well, several miles in. Whitman family, apparently, when they came to this place I'm talking about, where you run out of some place to go, they went on up Five Points Creek. And there's a mountain called Sugarloaf up there. And you can see it from the creek, or you can look up, and then if you take the summit road across the top there, you can see Sugarloaf Mountain from either side. And Mrs. Whitman, in writing her diary about that area, I think she thought that she was ever going to hell. She was already there when they got there. She was so tired and so upset. And then getting from Five Points Creek up to the top of that summit, then they was just Well, in a short diary, I've read her diary, and there's quite, you know, short things she wrote, but she apparently was very unhappy with where they were. But they got up there on that, where the Summit Road is now, and they went over and they dropped right down onto the Umatilla River. And that would be the fork that isn't the part that comes out of Ruffle, it's the part that comes out of the middle country down through there. Anyway, they got to there and then they dropped down into that canyon, and if you've ever been down in there, I can't imagine anybody. Even today, I wouldn't want to go down there, even elk hunting. It's just, you know, it's something else. But anyway, that opening up of that area, the roads went, you know, there people fought their way any way they could go, and I'm sure there was more than one way that they got to over to the Walla Walla country.
Have you seen maps of some of these roads?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know where to put my hat. I've got the books in there. Yeah, shut that off.